The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So often in talking about the practice and what the Buddha taught, we might emphasize the dukkha, the suffering side of things. And that's not a big surprise since, you know, the Four Noble Truths kind of start there. The basic foundational teachings of the Buddha, there is suffering. There is a cause, with the arising of craving is the arising of suffering. But there is an end to suffering. That's the third noble truth, that statement of that possibility, which is kind of like the good news. And then what is the path? You know, that there's the path that leads to the end of suffering, but that path that leads to the end of suffering kind of applies back to the first noble truth. The first noble truth and action the Buddha encourages us to do is to understand suffering. And how do we do that? We apply the aspects of the Eightfold Path, wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration, to explore dukkha. So that kind of lens is not a surprise. And, you know, when we sit down and turn to our experience, that's sometimes what we see. You know, a big chunk of what the Buddha, you know, think of the Buddha's teachings in a couple different baskets. And one of the set of baskets is, how does the mind get caught up in suffering? You know, that the teachings that describe how when we see something pleasant, we want to get it, we want to hold on to it. And then we crave, we cling, we suffer, the whole teaching of how suffering comes to be. And many different ways that's brought into the teachings. And so that's one set of teachings, kind of descriptions about how the mind works in its stuck way, you know, in its ordinary human run-of-the-mill mind way, as the Buddha sometimes uses that phrase, the ordinary run-of-the-mill person. When they meet something pleasant, they like it, they want it, they want to get rid, they want more of it, they want to hold on to it, they suffer from that. So that's one set of the things that the Buddha teaches. And another set of the things the Buddha teaches are practices. How do we understand this mind? How do we get familiar with what's going on there? And a key there is mindfulness, being aware of what's here, beginning to see that these descriptions that the Buddha offered are not just somebody's good idea, but they're actually what's going on in the mind. And when we see that that's what's going on in the mind does begin to change. And that's another set of things that the Buddha talks about, is what happens is the mind starts to change. And that's the place I wanted to just explore a little bit today, because it's a kind of it's a different flavor of the teaching in some ways. In other ways, it's very similar, because this one teaching that basically is a description of what happens to the mind as it starts to understand dukkha, as it starts to understand suffering. What happens? It's a kind of a description of how the path unfolds internally. And how does the mind change as we practice? How does it get transformed? And it's kind of inspiring to hear this, you know. So I wanted to just speak to this, to offer it, because it can really uplift us in a way to hear basically that, you know, the first part of this teaching really emphasizes what happens to the mind is that it begins to experience delight and joy, and it begins to be more calm and tranquil, and happiness arises. And all of this is the ground out of which concentration arises and out of which understanding arises. This teaching it's got a fancy title, Transcendent Dependent Origination. Some of you may have heard of the teaching of dependent origination. Some of you may not have, but it's the teaching of dependent origination it's a teaching that describes how the mind is caught in suffering. The basic pattern that human minds do, and I won't go into it in detail, but it's basically, you know, when there's something pleasant, we tend to want. We want it, we crave it, we hold on to it, we cling to it. From that clinging, there's born this kind of identification with needing to have it and keep it. And from there, the suffering just tumbles forward. So it's a description of the causal, or the kind of the causes and conditions that lead the mind in the direction of suffering. The teaching of transcendent dependent origination is a description of the causes and conditions that lead the mind to let go of suffering, that lead the mind to freedom. And the first condition there is suffering. And suffering, actually, there's kind of two places, two directions suffering can go. Either we can have our habitual response to suffering, which is, this is a problem, I got to fix it, I got to change it, something's wrong, I'm bad, the world is awful, and we just head back into that spiral. Or there might be the possibility, and this is kind of the next step on this direction towards freedom, when that suffering is met with some confidence or faith or kind of a sense of, or hearing a teaching, first of all, hearing something that says, oh, there's a way, there's another way than this habitual way that we do things. There's another way. And there's actually things that we can do. There are practices, there are understandings that we can engage with. And this is within your grasp. This is possible for you to do. When we hear that and we actually begin to have confidence in that teaching, that expression of it's possible to find another way, that puts us onto this other direction, onto this chain of transcendent dependent origination, where it's describing a set of kind of causal or kind of conditions, not causes so much, but conditions that support each other, that lead us to understand suffering and have that freedom, that mind that is released from reactivity, the mind free from greed, aversion, and delusion. And so that first place is like if with suffering the teaching includes doing the practice. So, you know, the teaching includes engaging with the practices of the Eightfold Path, with wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration. And so with that kind of sense of confidence, we kind of apply more interest to the meeting of suffering. And we end up kind of stepping into this other direction. So teaching on transcendent dependent origination, there's a couple of images, a couple pieces I wanted to point to. I'm not going to try to go through this teaching in detail tonight. I just want to give you just an overview, a kind of a flavor. First of all, that there is this understanding that there's a kind of a natural movement in the direction of freedom. The image that's used in this teaching, and those of you who like the sutta references, this is found in the Samyutta Nikaya. It's in the 12th book, the 23rd sutta, so Samyutta Nikaya 12:23. And it describes this direction towards freedom, this unfolding of this chain, as being as natural as when rain falls on a mountain, the water runs down the slope of the mountain. It gathers in crevices, and then in those crevices, it runs further down and gathers in streams, and then it fills up those streams, and it gathers in lakes, and it fills up those lakes, and it gathers in rivers, and it fills up those rivers, and it gathers, flows to the ocean. So just that very natural image of water flowing downhill is the way this unfolding of this path, or this these qualities of mind that happen as we engage with the practice, they're said to be as natural as that. And so the first piece of when confidence in this teaching meets suffering, the next piece of that is when there is that confidence, there is a way. Then delight is the natural result of that. Now, we may not always experience delight in our practice, but I think one of the key pieces I wanted to point to is, the first half of this teaching really points to these really heart qualities, these emotional kind of qualities, and they are emotions. The delight, joy, and happiness, we consider those emotions. Calm, tranquility, we don't necessarily consider an emotion as much, but it's in that flavor too. And that this is the first set of things that are said to happen as we start to engage. Now, as I said, we may not always experience them, but it points to that these qualities are firmly on our path. I was talking to somebody the other day who was describing their practice, and they were saying, what I do is it seems like so often right now, it's very accessible to just sit in this place where I'm feeling really easeful, and there's a lot of feeling of just being connected with the body, and there's just a lot of delight in that. And she said, how is this connected to Buddhism? And I said, this is firmly on the path. This is described as what happens as we engage in the practice. You're experiencing the fruits of the practice in some ways. And the thing that's so great to me about this teaching is that those fruits are there, they are available pretty quickly. They can be available pretty quickly if we kind of attune to them. I think for me, I kind of attuned more to the dukkha, and I got to do it right, and I got to get rid of the dukkha. But as we start to learn, that these qualities are part and parcel of what happens as the mind moves in this direction, we can begin to recognize them. We might notice sometimes that when we're looking at something, even something difficult, this person I was talking to the other day wasn't describing this part so much, but we can, be seeing or recognizing, here's something the mind is struggling with. But then if we recognize it and it's like, oh yeah, that's what it is. This is what the mind is doing right now. And the mind can be aware of it. If there's the recognition kind of the mind that is able to hold it and know it. Sayadaw Utejaniya, one of my main teachers, talks about recognizing how is the mind that's meeting the experience. You know, what's happening in the experience might be something that's unpleasant, or there might be an emotion arising that's a little bit of a reaction. But if there's awareness of it, if the mind is aware of it, it's like, oh yeah, that's what's happening. That mind that's, oh yeah, that's what's happening. That mind may have the flavor of delight even, or joy, or happiness. Oh, that's what's happening. So many times as I've had that shift in my practice, it's like, oh yeah, it's just frustration arising. That's what's happening. And there's a kind of the mind kind of settles back, and there's almost like a little smile in the mind. That's that quality of delight or happiness. And then that, when we can recognize that is happening, you know, when we can recognize that that's a part of the practice, it's not separate. That joy and that happiness, that delight can be there even as we're looking, dealing with something that might be challenging. And if we can recognize that, it's like it's nourishment for our practice. When we can recognize that, it's nourishment for the faith, for the confidence that this is a direction that's helpful. And then one other piece I'll point to, this chain, and I'll just read these right now. The first, I've mentioned the first few. With suffering as condition, faith arises with suffering as a condition, or confidence, faith or confidence arises with suffering as a condition. With faith as a condition, joy. With joy as a delight. I like the translation of delight for that word. With faith as condition, delight can arise. And that's kind of, that can be just connected to, oh, there's a way. Oh, there's a possibility of something else. You know, that can bring a sense of delight. And then a little more engagement with the confidence that comes with that. So looping back to a little more confidence, that delight can support that confidence and then lead to some joy. That this is moving in the direction of transformation. And then a little bit of calm can come in, the sense of, okay, I can do this. And then happiness arises, can come at the next set. And the next condition that is said to follow happiness is concentration. So this was not what I thought was the way to concentration. You know, I thought a lot of hard work was the way to concentration. Bear down, hold on to objects. That was the way to concentration. But happiness as the way to concentration, that was not my thought. And, you know, this, when I finally began to learn that, and you know, the relaxation piece that I so emphasize and that Sayadaw Utejaniya emphasized, and then I really picked up, that supported me so much, that relaxation created conditions that allowed a sense of ease, of happiness, of calm to be there to support a very natural direction, movement in the direction of concentration, not a trying to hold on to experience, but one that's more, just more naturally arising out of the kind of momentum of the mindfulness. And then with that concentration based in happiness and confidence, there is the understanding of suffering, basically. Understanding of The next one. Knowledge and vision of things as they are is the phrase there. And it's basically recognizing, understanding that things are impermanent, unreliable, not self, that greed, aversion, and delusion are not ways to happiness. So this understanding begins to dawn on the mind. And then there's a release, there's a letting go, there's a kind of the next word is disenchantment. The mind gets disenchanted with all the ways that it has thought that it could find happiness, all of those habitual ways based on reactivity, based on greed, based on thinking I'm going to control this. I'm going to shape my environment based on wanting to get rid of things and hold on to things. The mind begins to recognize that strategy. It had been enchanted by that strategy and believed it was helpful, but that bubble of belief, it's like the bubble of enchantment about believing how greed, aversion, and delusion. We basically see in that moment, in that place, that I've been believing greed, aversion, and delusion are serving me, but they're not. They're actually connecting me back to suffering. So that like bubble of being enchanted by our unwholesome reactive mind states, it gets burst. And then there's a release. The next one, release from suffering. So I mostly wanted to just bring in these qualities of, and we don't necessarily talk about them that much, the qualities that are kind of the ground out of which our practice, it's like our practice naturally moves in the direction of freedom as we see. It's like these qualities of delight, of joy, of calm, of happiness are kind of like the signposts or the guide for us that say, yeah, this is the direction to well-being. This feels like there's a pull in that direction, like the mind wants to go in that direction, like the rain running down that hill. Because those qualities are offering the taste, the foretaste, the taste of well-being. And then those qualities support us as that the mind actually begins to see, oh, I've been completely deluded about where happiness lies. I've been so confused. The mind is just so confused about that. And it's not any of our fault. It's just how the mind is conditioned. And so as the mind starts to see, as the mind starts having that, getting disenchanted, and that place of disenchantment, that can be a bumpy time sometimes. It's like, sometimes it feels like, all of my strategies that I have been living my life with, what do I do? How do I live my life? When we have some connection with these other qualities, the delight, the happiness, the joy, the tranquility, that can be something to kind of support us through that time. It's like, oh yeah, these things are there. I don't quite understand. You know, in that place where the mind is getting disillusioned or disenchanted by its strategies, it doesn't quite understand that we don't need to have strategies. You know, that we don't need to be in charge of this. This is just going to be the running downhill. You know, that of nature, of course, the direction will be towards ease and peace and happiness and freedom. And that we don't have to have strategies for that. So Yeah, I was just inspired to talk for the word delight and joy and happiness were very resonant for me today. So I just wanted to bring those in and point to how they are part of our path. So, what are your reflections? We have a few minutes. If there's any comments or, yeah, Ali.
All right, thank you, Andrea. For me, I can see the dukkha arising, in me, and then I notice the aversion that I have towards it. But I still fall in the same habit because that fate and stuff does not arise as readily. I could see what am I doing that's causing the suffering, but I cannot get untangled from it. That just like keeps looping again.
Yeah.
But that leap to the fate is not there for me
Well,
to leap to the other ones.
I would say there is some faith. It just may not be what you think of as faith, because you are willing to try to be with that aversion. And that, I mean, why are you willing to do that? That's faith.
Yeah, but it just get entangled on it. They just like keep looping
Yeah.
back into the dukkha
Yes,
again.
we
It's
do.
not
We do
releasing itself.
that. Yes, that, and that's where we need a little bit deeper faith in a way, and sometimes just hearing from people like, yeah, this takes a while. This keep going. Yes, so for myself, looking at my aversion, the massive anger, the massive aversion, the massive self-hatred that was in my mind, and how long it took. It was not like, oh, you see this once and it goes away. But I, there are some times we get little tastes of,
Yes.
oh, it went away, or my first flavor of that was seeing how, the mind was kind of headed in a direction to being massively angry, and it was going like, wow, there he goes, and doesn't have to do that. And so there was a release, just a moment of seeing a different possibility. But it got caught in it over and over again after that. But there was a little bit more faith that it was that the path was the right direction, because I had experienced that, that what I had been doing let the mind see it was headed into suffering, and it let it go, and I just kind of sunk to the ground. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't think it was possible for the mind to do that. And in that moment, there was the sense of, yeah, I'm going to keep doing this. I didn't think by any means that it was gone in that moment, but that there was a confidence that this is worth doing. And so, yes, we keep getting caught. I mean, that was my first, within the first couple of weeks of my starting to practice. And then I worked with that anger, that hatred, and that self-hatred for years more. And so, we do keep getting caught, but we see these little moments, and like that moment of seeing that release, that was seeing, there was an amazing joy and delight and happiness that arose with that, and seeing the release from that suffering, and the confidence just got stronger. So to me, this whole path is really a cycle. That we may see a little bit of freedom that happens, a little release, and I think you've seen that at times, and
Yes,
so and we see
just
that,
hearing you say that increases my confidence in
yeah,
going
and then
forward.
it does increase our confidence, and then we keep going, and so it is a long process, but when you notice that kind of happen, touch into the confidence there, touch into the delight there, because that will nourish that confidence too. That'll nourish that confidence more, to kind of recognize, oh, there is this possibility of something different. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So yeah, the faith and confidence don't always feel there, like they're there. But if they're, I mean, so we don't necessarily have that sense of, yeah, I'm doing this. But if there is the enough confidence to say, I'm going to keep trying, just recognize that as faith. You know, sometimes just that, and even just recognizing that as faith can lend a little bit of delight. When we touch into it, it's like, oh yeah, I do think that it's helpful to try, even though it keeps looping back. I think it's helpful to try. And so that can kind of nourish us to say, oh yeah, that's there. And maybe just a little flavor of that delight can come in.